greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young this week. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Well, it was 1 year ago that the University of North Carolina made it to the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship, only to lose in literally the last second of the game as Villanova hit a buzzer beater that gave them the title. 1 year later, at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, Arizona, the University of North Carolina avenged that heartbreaking loss last year, defeating Gonzaga University 71-65 last night to win the 2017 NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Tournament. This title is the sixth for North Carolina and the third for Coach Roy Williams, who won titles with North Carolina in 2005 and 2009. After the game, Williams said that the team's success was due in large part to three of his top players, who joined him at the post-game press conference: junior guard Theo Pinson, senior forward Isaiah Hicks, and junior guard Joel Berry II.
These guys made big-time plays. Theo was all over the board getting loose balls. Joel made a couple of big baskets. Isaiah, my boy's been struggling like a dog, but tonight he looked like a greyhound there a couple times at the end. But I told him this morning, your last high school game, you won a state championship, and he had like 34 points, 30 rebounds. I told him I would take that tonight. He didn't really give that to us, but he was big for us and made a couple of big, big baskets down the stretch. At the end, when you're watching your kids jump around and the excitement, the thrill they have, there's no better feeling in the world as a coach.
Now, the flip side of that is the disappointing loss for Gonzaga, but it was also the farthest that the school had ever gone in the NCAA tournament. Prior to this year, Gonzaga had never even made the Final Four, let alone the championship game. Williams reflected on the Zag season and had nothing but praise for Gonzaga head coach Mark Few.
I have nothing but great things to say about Mark Few and the Gonzaga team. They had an unbelievable year, but we made some plays down the stretch. There's nobody in coaching that I have more respect for than Mark. He's a young man that I've tried to talk with, and two, we've enjoyed each other's company and watching them on tape and looking at the stat columns and how they were significantly better than us in several categories, but they had a great, great run.
Joining me once again is Dan Friedel of VOA's Learning English Division to talk about the NCAA final and more. Now, on yesterday's show, Dan, you predicted North Carolina would win. You were right, and you predicted by about 3 or 4 points, not too far off with the 6-point margin of victory they had, but it was actually closer than the score might suggest. UNC led by just 1 point with under 30 seconds to go.
Yeah, the Tar Heels had a lot of trouble last night playing any kind of fluid game, getting good looks at the basket, making passes to open men. A lot of that was absent from their game, and the day after, a lot of columnists and reporters are complaining that the officials slowed down the game quite a lot. They called a lot of fouls. The two teams combined for 52 free throws. Neither team shot free throws especially well, including North Carolina. It kind of went back to how their Final Four game against Oregon went, where they missed four free throws in a row, with basically no time left on the clock to give Oregon a chance to win that game. But North Carolina held on, and they held on in this game too. I mean, a couple of breakaway plays in the last minute clinched it for North Carolina. There was a dunk and another breakaway shot that gave North Carolina the lead that they never gave back. It was 65-63 in favor of Gonzaga, with under 2 minutes to go. At that point, it could have been Gonzaga's game if a few things went their way, but North Carolina scored 8 in a row to win the game by the final margin of 71-65. It's an exciting thing to see your school win a championship like that. the main drag outside of the University of North Carolina campus was packed all night. I actually have some close friends who work for the school, and they were out celebrating, even though they're not typically who I would think of as sports fans.
So everybody's a sports fan when your team wins.
Everybody's
right?
a sports fan when the local team wins, that's for sure. And it's not as exciting of a game as it was last year with Chris Jenkins' buzzer-beating shot. I mean, in the world of VOA Learning English, we do pick some sports things to write about occasionally. And that game really resonated with me and some of the other editors in our office. So we decided to write a story about the reaction to this game-winning shot. So it wasn't like that last night, but it was a good finish to the long college basketball season.
Yeah, especially if you're a North Carolina fan. I mean, this is a big win for them. It's the sixth time that they've won the national title in school history, the third time for Coach Roy Williams, all three of those that he's won with North Carolina. How big is this win for Roy Williams, for their program, for their school?
Well, they were talking about this during the broadcast last night, that Roy Williams was friends with Dean Smith, the revered former coach of the University of North Carolina, and Dean Smith was telling Roy Williams apparently that he should keep coaching for as long as he could, because that keeps you young, keeps you around these players, keeps you active, and he shouldn't retire for a long time. And at this point, Roy Williams is about the age that Dean Smith was when Dean Smith told Roy Williams that story. And so I would imagine that Williams is going to keep at it for a long time, as long as those teams keep playing well. But the University of North Carolina, we have to mention that it's not without its controversy. The school is under investigation for some problems in their academic department as it relates to some of the athletes in both the football and basketball team. Athletes taking classes where they were pretty much guaranteed to get a good grade. That's something that a lot of sports fans and a lot of critics of the world of sports are looking into, and we'll see how that is resolved in the future. So it's not really an unblemished title. There's still some shadow under the North Carolina program. And some people were asking, why was North Carolina even able to play in this game? They thought maybe they should have been sanctioned. They should have been kept out of postseason play for a year or two. That's happened to other schools, and it hasn't happened to them yet.
And Coach Roy Williams alluding to that in the postgame press conference, talking about some of the difficult circumstances that the team has had to deal with in the past few years. Now, the flip side of that is Gonzaga. A disappointing loss for them, but this is the farthest they've come in school history. They'd never even been to the Final Four, and here they get to the championship game. Is this just the beginning for them? Are we going to see them on the national stage going forward?
Well, Gonzaga has been there for a long time. They've been one of these up-and-coming teams that people have looked at in the western part of the U.S. You think about basketball in the United States, and college basketball in particular. You think of the East Coast schools that used to be in the old Big East Conference, like Georgetown and St. John's and Providence and Villanova and Boston College and the big metropolitan centers in the East. And now some of these smaller schools are getting a chance to shine. And Mark Few, the coach of Gonzaga, has done a great job of building up that program a little bit under the radar. And now the chance for them to get some big-time recruits, I think, is there. You're on the national stage like that. People who are 16, 17 years old who are basketball stars are going to start thinking of Gonzaga as a place to go.
Now, there are actually three teams, I found this out today, that have lost in the final in 1 year and gone on to win it in the next year. Twice North Carolina did it, Duke did it once, Kentucky did it once. We'll see maybe if Gonzaga can add itself to that list next year. We're going to take a quick break, Dan. I want to come back and I want to talk a little bit about the other big story yesterday, which was Major League Baseball opening day. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Lenore Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Fali.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Against All Odds, a book written by Cameroonian lawyer Angela Kwemo. It's a practical guide to making the most of your God-given talents and using them to better yourself, your country, Africa, and the human race. That's all on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
We're back on the sunny side of sports here at the Voice of America. I'm Andrew Palcheski here with Dan Friedel of VOA Learning English. And we talked about on the show yesterday, it wasn't just the NCAA men's final, it was opening day for Major League Baseball on Monday. What were some of the big stories coming out of yesterday's initial baseball games?
The teams that are looking forward to a big year this year, the majority of them won. It was a good day for the favorites. The Los Angeles Dodgers set a team record for the most home runs in an opening day game by defeating the San Diego Padres 14-3.
The blowout.
It was a blowout. The Washington Nationals, our local team here in Washington, D.C., just about a mile and a half from our VOA studios, they had a comeback win against the Miami Marlins, winning 4-2. Big home run from Bryce Harper and an interesting pinch hit home run to lock it up for Adam Lind, who is a veteran player, a new player on the Nationals. Boston Red Sox, my sister was at the game. I got some videos and photos from her during that game. The Red Sox defeated the Pittsburgh Pirates 5-3. The Red Sox had one big inning in the middle of the game that put them in the lead for good. Another fairly local team, the Baltimore Orioles, won in extra innings against the Toronto Blue Jays. Toronto is a team that people think will do well this season, but they obviously have some bullpen problems. They were ahead in the game, and Baltimore came back to win that one. My hometown Cleveland Indians, who so disappointingly lost in the World Series last year, managed to have a comeback win against the Texas Rangers. They were down early, scored a few runs at the end of the game to beat Texas down in Texas. So only one group of fans was disappointed yesterday. The opening day is really great for everybody. I mean, half the teams don't get to have their opening day for a few days from now because they can't play in every stadium at once. But one game was rained out, and that was Detroit Tigers and Chicago White Sox. So that fan base was a little sad. They didn't get to see those teams play yesterday.
They'll have to make that up. And I do want to point out, too, that my New York Mets won 6-0. So a good start for them for opening day.
I meant
as well
to mention the Mets. Yeah, yes. 6-0. That is a good start.
Take the wins where we can get them.
They were playing the Braves, though, after all.
Yes, the Atlanta Braves, not one of the top tier teams, we'll say, in Major League Baseball. But you were at the Washington Nationals game yesterday for opening day, and I understand you were doing a little bit of work there. Talk a little bit about what you were doing. What you can tell us about what you're working on.
Well, so part of Major League Baseball is this, I would say, kind of secondary organization that is called Major League Baseball Advanced Media, and it's been around for over a decade, really pioneering putting baseball on the internet, making things early on that were called condensed games. For example, a typical baseball game is about 3 hours, and they were able to reduce it by just showing the important plays for maybe a 30-minute highlight. That's all gone on further and faster. You talk about what's called analytics in the world of baseball. It's not just counting up the stats at the end of the game. It's looking at how the players perform on the field. What do they do? How fast do they run? How hard do they throw the ball? How far do the hits go? What are the angles of the hits? So all of this information is now available because there are these great tracking systems in all of the stadiums. It's a combination of radar and cameras, and basically every player on the field produces data every play, every pitch. Even if nothing happens in the pitch, there is some data that can be extracted from that moment. So if you're a casual baseball fan, you'll be able to see a lot of this information on the screen now. For example, during the game yesterday, there were some replays that showed the launch angle of the home run that Bryce Harper hit, or the speed of a double that was hit by Giancarlo Stanton from the Miami Marlins. And you're going to see that more and more this season. And people are going to start to become familiar with these statistics, not just how fast is the pitch. You know, is the pitch 160 kilometers per hour? That's something that we've known for a long time. But now you're going to start thinking about how are the outfielders reacting to the hits, and How hard are the hits? And did the outfielder make the play that's a routine play for every other player in baseball to make, or was it an exceptional play? All of those things are now going to be quantified in a way that we never saw before. So it does add an extra layer to watching baseball that wasn't available in the past.
Yeah, the science behind the sport, I guess we can call it. But very interesting stuff, especially if you're a baseball fan. Even if you're not, interesting just to check this stuff out and find out more about the inside of the game. So Dan Friedel of VOA Learning English, thank you so much for joining. Great to have you on as always.
Yeah, happy to help out, Andrew, and look forward to seeing Sonny in the building soon.
Yes, me too. So from the big sports day yesterday, we move to a holiday that's being celebrated around the world today, Equal Pay Day, which according to the National Committee on Pay Equity, symbolizes how far into the year women must work to earn what men earned in the previous year. Now, in recent years, this has become a particularly significant issue in professional sports like soccer and hockey, where women's teams are typically paid less than men's. Now, last year, the U.S. women's national soccer team started a social media campaign, hashtag Equal Play, Equal Pay, that not only called for equality in terms of salary, but also in terms of incentive bonuses, training resources, and travel, a fight they're still waging. Last week, we saw a similar campaign from U.S. women's national hockey team, but with some key differences. Their campaign, hashtag Be Bold for Change, also pushed for equality for pay, training, and travel. But to make their point clear, the team said that unless they could be treated the same as the U.S. men's national hockey team, they would sit out of the World Hockey Championships. Lending their support to the campaign? The U.S. men's national hockey team, who said they would join the boycott and stay home from their tournament in May if the women didn't receive equal pay. Well, last week, the USA Hockey announced that they would give U.S. women's hockey increases in compensation, travel, and insurance benefits, and would create the Women's High Performance Advisory Group, the first subgroup of USA Hockey devoted to women in the sport. And with their newly guaranteed pay and benefits secured, the women went off to the World Hockey Championships this week, where they currently have 3 wins and no losses. So a special Sunny Side of Sports shout-out to female athletes here in the U.S. and around the world as they continue to fight for pay parity. Sticking with women's sports, South Africa's had women competing in most of its popular sports for years, including soccer, rugby, and cricket. But there's a new unexpected game attracting women from townships across the country's biggest city, Johannesburg. Ireland's national sport, Gaelic football, is described as a mixture of rugby and soccer. Players hit the ball to one another with their hands and then try to score goals by kicking it either under or into a net or over an H-shaped post. And this Sunny Side of Sports Encore report, Darren Taylor, has the story from Johannesburg.
Kick it in. It's got to drop a little short, but it's dangerously in there. And a goal!
South Africa's Gaelic footballers study the game by watching TV footage of big matches in Ireland. Competitors use their hands and feet to pass the round ball in the air or on the ground to teammates to get close to the opponent's H-shaped posts. 2 teams of 15 players each try to score the most points by kicking the ball into the goal net, soccer style, or over the poles like in rugby.
Yeah, in Ireland, I guess it's a very historical game. It goes back through the centuries and people take great pride in the local teams. Then on top of that, it's quite an exciting game. It's a running game, high scoring. It's got some.
Keith O'Leary, a power plant developer, also coaches South Africa's national Gaelic football team, the SA Gaels. He's supported by fellow Irish expat, computer technologist and team chairman, David Devine.
Gaelic football globally has been Irish expats emigrating, bringing the game with them, having a kick around on a Friday night and going to the pub afterwards. That's been the tradition over the last couple of decades.
But now, Irish men like him and optician and team promoter Derek McCarthy are attracting South Africans to the sport.
We want the locals playing it. We want them absorbing the Irish culture and absorbing the love for the game, which they have been doing. And we started from such a small base, but it is really growing legs, and social media is just a great place to do that.
Hey! Go, 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 go!
A trainer drills the SA Gaels at a recent practice.
When the people who come to play for the first, second, third training session realise how easy it is for them to learn the skills, they then start promoting the game on our behalf. They go to their friends, who go to their friends, who go to their friends, and it becomes a bigger circle.
My background, I play soccer, but...
Tabiso Pakedi is part of that circle. He explains that Gaelic football is very fast and the training's tough. Pakedi says the different skills demanded by Gaelic football, like dribbling, hitting the ball and jumping high in the air to grab it, are what persuaded him to play it.
It's physical and handball, kicking, most kicking points, that's the most thing that I love, especially to make the team to win.
The athletic man in his mid-20s captains the SA Gaels. Coach O'Leary says it's difficult for them at this point as there's no Gaelic Football League in South Africa. So the squad trains in Johannesburg and plays proper matches in the Middle East, where Irish expats have entrenched the sport. The Gaels also visit Ireland as often as possible to learn from the masters. Pakedi recalls his first visit to the Emerald Isle.
Actually, I didn't know what to expect. The situation that we had there, it was the weather. The weather wasn't too good for us as we used to hot condition here.
But Irish coaches are surprised at the high-tempo game played by the South Africans, even on Ireland's storm-lashed, waterlogged, muddy fields.
They did themselves justice for a community to come so far and partake in the game in the conditions that were in it. It was really, really admirable.
A great thing to see. I never thought I'd see a South African team playing on that pitch.
On the Gaels' visits to Ireland, O'Leary says eyes are on them before they touch a ball. He says the Irish are amazed to see black Africans in yellow, red, green and blue jerseys attempting their national sport.
The Irish are very attracted to the team because of the colour and the noise that they bring.
In Ireland, the South Africans pull off the odd victory, but usually lose. Yet even so, they celebrate because they always go down fighting. Divine says for people so new to Gaelic football, they're extremely talented.
I think the players now that we have are some of the best ambassadors that South Africa has from a sporting perspective that travel the world, promoting the game from a South African perspective and just spreading the word to show that they're well capable of taking on some of the best international teams in the world and some of the best club teams at home in Ireland.
Smiling, Pakedi describes his vision of the future of Gaelic football in his country as modest.
Hopefully to see most of South Africans go to Ireland and compete against Irish and then to be the best, as if they are the one who've been playing the game before than the Irish.
Being virtually invisible in soccer-mad South Africa isn't dampening the enthusiasm of players like Pakedi. Instead, it's inspiring them to spread Gaelic football across the country and continent. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Thank you very much to Darren Taylor for that report. I think it's safe to say with a song in their hearts and their strength on the pitch that those Gaelic football players are going to go far, and we wish them all the best as they continue to play. Well, that'll do it here for the April 4th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer extraordinaire Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer John Dryden, and thank all of you out there for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For people living in former conflict zones, war may not end for years after the last shot has been fired and the peace agreement is signed. For example, landmines and unexploded munitions, remnants of the war between the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia and the Colombian government, stand in the way of post-accord stabilization and reconstruction and inhibit long-term development. They render millions of hectares of land unusable, preventing farmers from tending their fields and herders from pasturing their cattle. In too many countries, ordinary travel is dangerous because roads are lined with minefields and a misstep could cost a passerby his or her life. Everyday activities like gathering wood or forest fruits, hauling produce to the market, or even taking a shortcut through the fields are fraught with danger. Too many children have lost their lives and limbs chasing a stray soccer ball into a minefield. That is why every April 4th we observe the United Nations International Day for Mine Awareness and Assistance in Mine Action. The observance is meant to not only remind us that dangers linger long after the conflict is done, but also to detail all the steps taken by the international community to eliminate the threat of landmines and explosive remnants of war. The United States is working closely with the international community to address this serious humanitarian challenge, which puts innocent people, including many children, at risk, said State Department Acting Spokesperson Mark Toner. Since 1993, the United States has provided over $2.8 billion in assistance for conventional weapons destruction programs in some 95 countries. These programs produce tangible, measurable, positive results by providing the expertise and equipment to safely clear landmines and other unexploded ordnance and to assist landmine accident survivors with rehabilitation and reintegration, said spokesperson Toner. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson underlined the essential role that demining plays in stabilization in Iraq and Syria as civilians seek to return home to areas liberated from ISIS, he said. On this day of mine awareness, we urge other nations to join us in a robust international partnership with the shared goal of reducing the impact of landmines around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Lino Hmoudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Take your peek, watch on television, log on to the internet, listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Against All Odds, a book written by Cameroonian lawyer Angela Kwemo. It's a practical guide to making the most of your God-given talents and using them to better yourself, your country, Africa, and the human race. That's all on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30. UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.